me ask you, Mr. Barna, about the process of making the plaster model. How would you do that?
Well, you'd make your molds first and cast it and put it together.
Now, mold meaning the outer contours of the inner model, right?
Right.
You have to make it in what do you call it? A mirror image or an exact opposite or.
Right. Right. You just.
What do you call that?
Just to make a mold of the exact shape, no. And then putting it together, assembling it, and then pouring the cast
into the interior. Which
into
has
the
been
interior.
Hollowed out by what means to get an exact duplication of the surfaces you want?
Well, after the mold has been pulled, you have the exact shape of the clay model. Say
oh, you do it
section.
Over the clay.
Right.
Of course.
Right. You make a mold of the clay
what
from the clay.
What material do you use?
Plaster.
Mold?
Plaster. Well, now I think they use something else.
Okay, but then
this
they
is back in the
90s. Yeah. And you put some sort of a fix-it on the outside that would.
Then we paint it with a parting agent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then we would pour the cast. We would pour it into the mold in a thin form, say maybe an inch thick, or as thin as we could possibly get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we would pull it.
I see.
And then when you pull it out of the mold, you've got the exact shape. Of your car.
Your clay. Now that ruins the clay, as you said.
When you pull the mold off the clay,
right.
9 times out of 10, your clay has been damaged to beyond recognition.
What you're casting is the basic sculptured clay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Less all the exterior adornments. It's just the
right.
basic sculpture.
Right.
Then you, when you get the mold and it's finished, do you then use what form is the plaster in that you pour into the mold?
It's very smooth.
Heated?
No, it isn't heated.
It's just liquid plaster.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's a powder mixed with water.
Mm-hmm.
And
any special plaster that you use?
Well, it's molding plaster. Hard. That comes in different hardnesses.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I don't know, 1 and 2 and 3 or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Degree of hardness. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then from there you just pour your all your sections, and it's a matter of putting them all together.
What do they do with the molds?
If it's it all depends which car it is. If
mm-hmm.
it's a car that they want to keep track of, well they'll
hang on to the
Ford Motor Company has bin after bin of these molds.
Do they of molds? Eh?
Molds.
Uh-huh, yeah. What this dries rather quickly, and you're able to pull mm-hmm. the mold apart because it's in halves or quarters.
Right.
And then you have a final plaster model, which mm-hmm. cannot be
changed very easily.
It can be exterior work can be done in terms of.
You can apply your moldings, foil, paint, dynop
mm-hmm.
To plaster, but you can't change the plaster itself.
It's just not malleable.
No.
So you've got a final plaster. This is the final approval model.
Yeah, they don't make that unless it's pretty well approved.
Yeah, and it's really just a display model, isn't it? What is his final purpose to do a plaster model?
Probably for transferring from one part of the country to the other.
Really, what does that mean?
They want to show it on the West Coast.
Oh, it's a show
yeah.
model. Yeah, okay.
And it lasts. It won't crack as
yeah.
easily.
Mm-hmm.
And
what thicknesses are they usually?
Oh, the
actual plaster model.
I'd say 2-3 inches. They're
really
heavy.
Very thick. Yeah.
Very heavy.
So they wouldn't crack. Yeah.
No.
And they're impervious to heat and
oh
cold.
Yeah, I think weather and sun could damage it.
Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But not like clay.
Yeah. Right.
You put the clay model out in the sun and it melts.
So it's completely painted. Dynox completely painted, completely taped to simulate chrome. It's got
plastic. Clear plastic for
the windshield,
for your glass, and
the glass,
greenhouse. And
greenhouse, uh-huh. And you've got simulated, if the, in the early days, like, they were just beginning to flush the taillights and the headlights, but those are simulated. Uh-huh. And
The bumpers can be removable.
Mm-hmm.
You can pull them in and out,
yeah.
Mainly for different designs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they have two different bumpers that they would like to show,
uh-huh.
Well, then they make it so that you can put the one in and take it out and put the other one in to compare.
What do you do in case of a convertible?
It's no different.
No different.
Uh-huh. It's just minus the greenhouse. Just minus the... Oh, you mean the cloth top?
Yeah, any simulation there?
Oh, yeah, they can cloth on really? on plaster.
They can't make it move back and forth, but
they could.
Could they?
Yeah, they in fact, my father-in-law at Studebaker made a mechanism for a convertible. He
really?
Designed it and built it himself. He was an engineer.
To use on models?
Right, and he would take this, and he had to use a little electric motor that he would fasten to it, and that roof would go up and down, fold up, and they make those models too. You'd be surprised what they do in the interior too.
You haven't said much about your family. What did your father do?
My father passed away quite young.
He did. Mother remarried, or?
Yes, my mother remarried.
Mm-hmm. You lived in South Bend.
I lived in South Bend all my life.
And your stepfather worked at Studebaker.
My stepfather, no. My father-in-law was a Studebaker.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
My grandfather made made wooden spokes.
For the carriages?
For the wagons? I think it was for the early cars.
Okay. The early
Studebaker.
Cars.
Yeah.
And your father-in-law was an engineer.
He was. He worked in engineering for 40-some years.
Where'd you meet his daughter?
I met her through another girlfriend that I had.
This is around high school.
We were in
high school.
Time, yeah. We were in high school. Yeah.
South Bend, a nice place to grow up in. Those
yes, it was.
Yeah,
very nice town.
Town.
Yeah.
You had a sister city in Mishawaka, did you not?
Yeah, it was next door city.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Was that seemed to be the place where most of the workers lived, in my impression, or was that a separate community, really?
No, Mishawaka was noted mostly for its rubber factory, Uniroyal.
Oh, Uniroyal.
It used
there.
To be called the Ball Band Plant.
Really?
And then Uniroyal bought it.
Oh, I see.
What
did it produce?
They made rubber galoshes, rubber shoes, rubber items. I don't know what... overcoats and so forth, or raincoats.
What was the name of the company again? Ball Band.
Ball Band.
That was the local company that Uniroyal picked up.
Yeah.
In their expansion.
Right.
You went into the Marines. Did you enlist?
I enlisted in 42.
Where did you serve?
In the Pacific, Central Pacific.
Do you remember any particular campaigns that you
remember? Oh, I was involved in the at Tarawa and Saipan.
Those were tough.
Mm-hmm. I was wounded at Saipan.
Were you? Were you invalided back to Pearl Harbor? Or
no, I wasn't wounded that badly.
They kept you right there.
I was evacuated to Pearl Harbor.
Oh, were you?
Mm-hmm. And I was there for it was near the end of the war.
Oh, I see.
And I spent my remaining overseas time in Hawaii.
Tararua was a particularly vicious, fierce battle.
Oh,
wasn't
very.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Saipan wasn't much better.
Well,
had that been bombed out pretty much?
Depends on where you were.
Okay.
Saipan was long drawn out. It lasted 30 days.
Yeah.
Where Tarawa was hot and heavy, but it only lasted 3 days.
And the casualties were frightening.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, I wasn't in the first wave at Tarawa.
You're probably lucky.
But I was in the first wave at Saipan.
Mm.
And I was in one of the Amtraks that was hit.
Mm.
So that
mm-hmm.
Actually, I was wounded twice in one day.
What was your, in one day?
Mm-hmm.
What were your duties? Were you?
I was a rifleman.
You say an Amtrak, you mean the kind of
amphibian
landing boats?
Right, amphibian tractor.
Yeah.
That carried 35 men.
Mm.
And we had a huge wave to come over, to come into the beach. And we were very fortunate in a way that we didn't flip over coming in.
Yeah.
Because most of them flipped over.
Yeah,
they didn't expect
heavy,
that.
Heavy equipment they probably drowned, right. Didn't they?
Right.
Heavy gear.
But we were unfortunate another way, that after we made it, we got a direct hit.
Oh, no.
We landed underneath a big mountain that they fired at us point blank.
Mm. What kind of ammunition?
A big shell, some
sort.
Big
shell, yeah. Mm-hmm. Howitzer or
something. Yeah.
So you're wounded twice in one day?
Mm-hmm. I was wounded coming in and in the Amtrak, and then after we jumped out of the Amtrak, there was a machine gunner on the beach that we had to.
And before you could neutralize him,
right.
Caused a lot of havoc.
Mm-hmm.
Those were exciting but perilous days, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, maybe at this juncture you could, because you bridged the two eras. In recent years, there's been a lot of talk about among safety conscious people that work in the fabrication shops is threatened to your health, especially respiratory problem. Did you have any problems with vapors or dust or sediment of some kind being ingesting in your lungs or your throat? Did you find yourself very dry-throated at the end of the day?
No. I've never noticed any problems from fiberglass. Well, I am allergic to fiberglass.
I think that was the big problem later on, was it not? That when people had to use bandsaws to do a lot of cutting up fiberglass components. The dust from that, I think, was pretty lethal.
Yeah. I'd never known any problems from clay.
Uh-huh.
It has sulfa, but and it doesn't smell too good.
Yeah.
But I'd never noticed that.
You never had any respiratory problem from breaking clay?
No.
Plaster was a little bit different, probably, with the dust, and fiberglass is even more dangerous because of the particles that you got from the banding and so forth. Yeah.
Well, I would break out from fiberglass. As soon as the fiberglass dust started to fly, I would break out.
Isn't that an asbestos base?
I don't know what it is, but it sure doesn't agree with me.
Yeah, you know? Deadly stuff. But you've come off with no ill effects.
No, not at all.
No, good. The 53 Studebakers come out and they're a hit. They find that Lowy and Burke and Studebaker have got a hit on their hands. So what happened after that in terms of your career?
Well, it wasn't long after that that things started going downhill. Packard, I guess, here in Detroit was going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided to merge.
Mm-hmm.
And when they merged, as far as I'm concerned, being on the bottom of the rung, I could see where Packard engineers and Studebaker engineers couldn't get together. They couldn't agree on things.
Mm-hmm.
And that you would hear rumors of this chief engineer battling with another Packard engineer and so forth. It didn't look good.
Mm-hmm.
So it was then that the modelers and designers started to make their shift
to
Detroit.
The situation.
Yeah. So when I came here, it was Bob Cotto and Johnny Reinhardt, a modeler by the name of John Lutz.
LUTZ?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You all came up together?
No, they came first, and I more or less
followed. Where did they go? Where did John go first?
He went to Ford.
And how about Bob Cotto? He went to Ford.
Bob Cotto went to Ford and stayed at Ford.
And then you did too.
Yeah.
Did they call you and say, "Hey, come on up. There's a spot for you."
Well.
How did you work out the transfer?
I was coming through here while I was on vacation. I brought my family through here.
Okay.
And I stopped to see the boys.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What'd they say?
They said, "Well, why don't you talk to my boss, and he'd like to talk with you about a job."
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I said, "Oh, I'm not interested. My wife will never let me go to Detroit."
Uh-huh.
So he said, "Well, just talk to him." Uh-huh. So I talked to one of the modeling leaders. He came out to the lobby, and I met Bud Kaufman there, too.
Bud Kaufman. Uh-huh.
And we had a discussion, and first thing you know, I had an application to fill out. I said, "Well, I don't want an application." He said, "Well, fill it out anyway."
Mm-hmm. Who's this talking? Bud Kaufman?
No, this was the modeling leader. His name was D'Angelo. Romeo D'Angelo.
Romeo D'Angelo? He was the chief modeler?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I filled it out and gave it to him, and first thing you know, about a week later, I got a letter from Ford Motor Company saying, "Would you consider coming to work?"
Wow.
For such and such a pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me about 2 weeks to decide.
Really? Because you were still pretty much attached to Studebaker.
Right.
Yeah. And Bob Burke was still there.
No? Yes. I guess he was.
What year would this have been?
55.
55.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Burke was still there or not. He left soon after or just before.
Mm-hmm.
And Cotto was already gone.
Yeah.
By 55.
Yeah.
So that's how I got to Ford.
Was it quite a wrench leaving the South Bend of Studebaker?
Yeah. Yeah. They. John Bird left after I did and went to GM.
General Motors, yeah. Stayed there for the rest of his career.
Right. And Don Hine went to GM.
H-Y-N-E?
No, it's H-E-I-N.
Oh, okay. He was another modeler?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he's still at Ford. I mean at GM.
Yeah. Well, before you leave Studebaker, is it possible to get your perspective on a rather interesting situation that occurred. And this is the. Did you know a fellow named Dick Khalil?
Yes. I doubt if he would remember who I am.
Okay.
But I knew him definitely.
The story goes is that Bob Burt had to lay Dick Khalil off in one of the periodic playoffs. Is this familiar to you?
Not that part.
Okay.
No.
And that Dick said, "Gee, I've got a young daughter." He lived in Mishawaka, I think, at the time. "Got a young daughter. I need a job." He said, "Well, I'll tell you what. I understand that George Walker, who was a consultant for Ford, is looking for people to work on the 49 Ford that they're thinking about." And he said, "I'll give you a note of introduction to him." So the story is that Khalil goes to George Walker, and George says, "Okay," he said, "we need some help." He said, "Here's a package drawing of the car that we're considering. I need a model." And the story is that Khalil is not a modeler, so he goes back down to South Bend and talks to his old friend Bob Cotto. Does the story sound familiar from there on?
I think from there on I'm beginning to know it. I hadn't heard this part.
Okay, fine. So what happened after that from your perspective?
Well, it's a story that every modeler heard, or being on the bottom of the ladder, you know, the rung. The way I heard the story, and the way most of the modelers heard it, was that Khalil wanted to be a designer.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to be a layout man.
Mm-hmm.
So Cotto told him that I will help you with a clay model.
That would give him a different perspective.
Right. Well, then you can take this model to Ford or wherever, and it'll help you get in.
Oh, but so Khalil had gone to Cotto then. That's true. He went to Cotto,
yeah,
and asked him for help on this model.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cotto was a modeler, even though he wanted to be a designer, he was really a modeler.
Yeah.
And so he said he'd help. So how did he help him? How did it work? You know?
He went to Cotto, and Cotto helped him with this quarter-size clay model.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Cotto is one of those designers that you can see what he does. You can pick out his renderings and his sketches and his models.
Mm-hmm.
You can put a million of them down and always be able to pick out Bob Cotto's.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Because he had a
distinctive signature.
Right, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So they together came up with this model. Now, it's just my opinion that Cotto probably did most of it, or all of it, because
Khalil was not done in the shop. Wasn't done in the shop, right?
I believe it was done in Cotto's basement.
That's what we found.
At home,
yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Not in Khalil's kitchen.
It could have been there too, because
yeah.
I remember being invited to Cotto's basement to look at a clay model.
Okay. What year was this?
And it was in 48.
48.
And I,
it's out there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether this car was done in his basement or in Khalil's kitchen, I don't think.
How big was it? Was it a quarter?
It was about a quarter size model.
Mm-hmm. Which is about how long?
Oh, I'd have to guess.
In inches.
I'd have to guess about 48 inches long.
48 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
in fact, I think he had to put it on a truck to take it to Ford.
Now that was done, that was a plaster model, right?
It was a clay model.
Clay model, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall that Bob Burt was involved in any way?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. Well, not that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Burt never mentioned it, or you never heard any scuttlebutt around the shop?
No. No, the way I heard the story, the way most other modelers that were there would say the same thing.
Uh-huh.
That Cotto and Khalil did the model.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could very likely be that Khalil did the whole thing.
I don't think so. No.
But I don't believe it.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe it.
As you say, just a draft?
Yeah.
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 Layout man.
But it could be that Cotto taught him to do it. So,
I see.
But,
so you were asked to come to Cotto's basement and view this quarter-size model.
I can't say whether that was the particular one or not.
Yeah,
but I remember
in retrospect that it looked like what you later saw to be the 49 Ford.
Right.
And did you say to yourself, hey?
When the 49 Ford came out,
yeah,
I tried to put two and two together, and I
They weren't very forthcoming as to what they were doing, were they?
No, I don't think they intended that to be the 49 Ford.
Oh, they didn't?
No, I don't think so.
But they were looking toward at least
right.
Cotto had gone to Detroit and gotten a package. I mean, Khalil had gone to Detroit and got a package sketch from George Walker and brought it back. And
yeah.
Presumably okay. said to Bob Cotto, hey, this may be the 49 Ford.
Yeah, well, that's very possible.
But were the contours and the designs reminiscent of what you later saw to be the 49 Ford? Can you think back?
Well, it's been 40 years ago.
I know. Yeah. Did you ever, when you saw it a year later, say, hey, that looks like something I saw?
That was the impression. Basement. My impression when I saw the first 49 Ford was that that's the same car I saw in Cotto's basement.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's been a long time ago. I wouldn't swear that was
yeah.
the car.
Cotto and Khalil said nothing along that line, along those lines. Why did they ask you to look at it? Just as a fellow modeler?
Well, yeah, just as a...
Get their opinion?
Yeah. We'd been out to a party and so forth. And
did they have the familiar slab sides that supposedly Cotto introduced?
Yeah.
The story goes that Bob Burke has recently told in a book is that that he helped with the front end and the spinner device.
I think it had it. Yeah, it had the one spinner, yeah.
Yeah, right.
The next model had two.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, that was out of your
right.
area, yeah.
Every clay modeler that was there, I'm sure, had seen the...
Had they?
The model that Cotto had in his basement.
Okay.
Whether that was the one or not, I don't know.
Were they able to get it out of the basement? You could get it upstairs?
Oh, yeah. It's only 40-some inches long, I would guess, and it wouldn't be hard.
So Khalil then took it back. By truck, you say? To Detroit?
I guess the talk was that he had to put it on a truck. It was too big. Couldn't put it in his trunk.
Yeah. And that he went back and said, here, Mr. Walker, here it is. I wonder if he represented it as his work, you think?
I wouldn't be surprised. Because he wanted the job.
Did you and Cotto?
And if I had been Khalil, I would have said I did it.
Did you and Cotto ever talk about that anomaly?
Cotto told me... more than once, that he said, don't you ever believe any other stories? He says,
I helped
Khalil with that.
Yeah.
And I believe it.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
I believe he did it.
So when the 49 Ford came out, you all of you looked at each other and said, hey,
yeah,
this looks very familiar.
Yeah. Well, I'd have to give Walker credit.
Yeah.
I think Walker knew good design, and you have to give him credit for following the...
Yeah.
He knew what he wanted, and he took credit for it, and I think he deserved credit for it. I don't think Bob Cotto should ever say, and I don't think he would ever say in public that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just putting two and two together
uh-huh.
and seeing what was in his basement and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I have to feel that Cotto had a lot to do with it.
So, in effect, Cotto was the father in much... very great degree in the 49 Ford.
I would say, yeah.